Yep.
Okay, super. I'm Linda Wigington, and with me is Rhett Major. We'll be presenting this session on particle filtration with central air handlers, folly or opportunity. So RAUKUS is the initiative we're both involved in. RAUKUS stands for Reducing Outdoor Contaminants in Indoor Spaces. And it is a Southwestern Pennsylvania initiative with a focus of understanding how to reduce the impact of exterior pollution, air quality and water pollution on indoor spaces. You might say, why? Well, that's because most of our exposure to outdoor pollution happens while we're in buildings. So buildings do provide some level of protection. The same level of ambient air pollution is going to be higher outdoors than indoors. The outdoor pollution will be. However, because we're in buildings so much more of the time, the overall exposure to outdoor pollution actually is dominated by what's going on and how we are living in our homes. So our homes are the primary way that we're exposed to outdoor pollution, much to many people's surprise. So within the RAUKUS initiative, we focus on particles. We actually have cohorts of 10 to 15 folks come through, monitor for a month. And anyway, so we'll be looking at data that they've provided and experiences they provided. But in focusing on particles, particles are also referred to as particulate matter, or PM. This graph shows a typical human hair, which is 50 to 70 microns. And PM2.5 represents all the particles that are less than the size of one of these little red beads. So pretty tiny amount in there. Small to begin with, and then it's everything less than. So that's PM2.5. And with the Dylos, we're measuring particles that are greater than 0.5 or 1/5 of a 2.5 or 1/2 of a micron. So we're measuring the same approximate amount of stuff, the same size of stuff that's in PM2.5 minus the stuff that's below our radar, but by weight, we're measuring essentially the same stuff that we're looking at in a different way. So there are lots of concerns with particles. They differ in toxicity. There can be adverse synergy with other co-pollutants, sulfur dioxide or nitrate, ozone. A fine and ultrafine particles can actually be vehicles. They're so small that they can actually cross the barrier to get directly into the bloodstream or into the brain. So they can actually carry, they're like a train that can carry semi-volatile organic compounds and metals. So there's lots of interactions with what's already generated in terms of indoor pollutants. So the RAUKUS premise is the precautionary principle, the public health standard of avoiding or minimizing exposure without necessarily making a direct connection to a given health-based standard. And then again, we really need to focus on outdoor plus indoor. You can't look at just reducing exposure to outdoor alone, because then you might end up trapping and concentrating indoor pollutants. So you need to have a comprehensive approach that addresses both outdoor and indoor. This shows you the percent of total deaths due to PM 2.5 and ozone. And the deep red is 7.3 to 9, and the deep blue is less than 3%. That's a huge number of deaths. The best estimates of the United States mortality burden per year is 230,000 to 300,000 deaths. You might say, well, gee, you know, I haven't heard of people dying of air pollution. But the thing is, it's not labeled as such. The deaths come up in many different ways. So the well-established diseases contributed to by PM2.5 are cardiovascular disease, asthma, and lung cancer. So those have been known for a long, long time. And more recent associations include pulmonary fibrosis, type 2 diabetes, Alzheimer's, decreased cognitive function, as well as premature birth and also low birth weight. So all of those things have been seen to be correlated with elevated exposure to PM2.5. So there are four strategies to reduce indoor particles. The first is to reduce the air exchange from the outside. The second is to reduce indoor sources. The third is to reduce resuspension or keep from stirring up what's there, whether it be legacy pollution from years ago or just the stuff that just got tracked in. And then the fourth is to filter the air. And we're going to focus on filtering the air. Three main options there: portable air cleaners, do-it-yourself fan filters, and also a MERV 13 filter and a central air handler. And that is the more specific focus of air work. So in this graph, you see a distribution plot of quite a few, several hundred of our participants. And each one of these vertical bars represents a person's particle counts, with the black bar in the center being the median, and this being 50% of the observations. What you'll see is there's a 20-to-1, actually more than a 20-to-1 difference between the highest median and the lowest median among our participants in southwestern Pennsylvania. And this scale on the left is the Dilos scale. It's not a third-party health-based scale, but it's the scale that they basically put particle counts in, from excellent to very poor. So when we looked at this and looked more closely, we were wondering, okay, well, what's going on in these houses that are way over on the right, that are in the good, very good, and excellent? And the majority of these sites use continuous filtration, either with portable air cleaners or a central air handler. So the Raucous Air Handler High MERV inquiry is summarized on our webpage. But basically, our initial question seemed very simple. And it was just, is there an easy way to determine if a person should use a high MERV filter with a longer air handler runtime? So the key question was, can the system handle the high MERV filter? But more importantly, can we afford the running at 24/7? You know, without causing problems? Easy enough. Seems like an important question to be able to answer. And there was a fairly simple, clear answer to that question. And it was that no, there is no easy way to determine that. And you really need a diagnostic screen. You need to evaluate each heating and cooling system. So here are the issues. The air handler energy use can be quite high. It's not unusual for the watt draw of the air handler to be 500 to 1500 watts, which means if you operate that continuously, it could cost you $500 to $1500 a year. That's a lot. In most cases, the blower speed is set wrong. It, instead of defaulting to a low speed if you set the air handler in continuous mode, it often defaulted to a high speed. And the speeds just weren't adjusted. They were based on what the factory settings were. They just, no one ever checked them. And when it's at a high speed, you've got higher energy costs and less effective filtration. And then ductwork issues can be really key, in that if the duct is undersized for the system, your static pressure can be too high, which can lead to equipment failure, which is pretty expensive. ECM motor changeouts can cost you $800. And then if you've got duct leaks, you can end up basically wasting an awful lot of energy, bringing in humidity, doing all kinds of things that are not good for your home's energy use, as well as a possibility of creating pressure-related problems. And also, if the duct leaks are between the filter and the air handler, you can just end up bypassing the filter and it won't be effective. So those are the three really big issues. Here you see a thermostat. Typical thermostat, and normally the thermostat is set on auto. That's actually good because of the problems we found. But unfortunately, the annual runtime is only about 15%. Numerous studies have been done across the United States and Canada. 15% is the typical percent of time per year that a air handler will be on if it's just based on a call for heating and cooling. That's not enough for filtration. And the need for heating and cooling doesn't align for the need for filtration. So with smart thermostats, we actually have a good option that could give us more control of on time, but we really want to be able to address the problems we found first. So an air handler unit, and this is, we're based in southwestern Pennsylvania, the land of basements. So this is a very typical furnace installation in a basement. And this is what most of our experience is based on. So an air handler unit, or AHU, is basically all the stuff that's connected to the furnace or the air conditioner that distributes the air. So that would include the ductwork, the motor, blower, the filter, the coil, and the controls. We'll be referring to the return drop, and that's this right here, this a plenum that comes down and then ties directly into the furnace. And this is the 1-inch filter. Typically, what we see is the filters are located right next to the furnace. So we install and have installed the ECM motor, and that's usually changing out from a PSC, a split capacitor. And the one we install is multi-speed. What this does is this allows us to set up a lower continuous speed for airflow in order to move the right amount of air through the system for filtration, and also to significantly lower the watt draw for the continuous operation. Now, you can get far more efficient, or significantly more efficient, ECMs. They're the variable speed ECMs, and they're in many heating and air conditioning systems. They often come with a cost premium, but they are not that's not a simple retrofit option. So we've gone with this this system. And these are the problems that we identified, and we've done over 60 diagnostic inspections. And the dominant problem is related to static pressure, with high total external static being 80% of the units. And oftentimes the high static is related to the return side and the filter. So that's where many cases have their constraints. We also see a lot of oversized heating systems, but the static is the main thing that would prevent us from being able to say you should run this system 24/7. So it's time for a Rockus video, and then Rhett will follow with his presentation. Now, Rockus commissioned Mark Dixon to do 5 videos telling the story of our different families and their interventions. So this is one of those 5. We're about to launch these. They'll be available on our website, but they're not available yet.
Okay, here we go.
Hey.
Hey, come on.
All right.
I started learning more about air quality. It quickly became apparent that the Pittsburgh region is comparatively poor in air quality, and there are real health hazards associated with that.
Rockus is an initiative based in southwestern Pennsylvania and stands for reducing outdoor contaminants in indoor spaces. The purpose of Rockus is to reduce the impact of exterior pollution on spaces where we live, work, and play.
I think one of the most startling things that I learned about was that exterior air is perhaps worse than interior air.
Our focus on particles is because we can monitor particles fairly accurately, fairly consistently, with low-cost monitoring. Particles have a huge health effect that's well documented. There's lots of data across not just the United States, but across the world on the impact of PM2.5 and other outdoor contaminants.
So we moved here to Millville in the summer of 2014, and around the same time, generally became aware of air quality issues. We were pretty used to waking up in the morning with itchy eyes or feeling a little oppressed by the air in our own home, and I think just thought that that was just the way things were. But it turned out that, you know, we actually just had really poor air quality. So we got trained by the Raucous team on what air quality means, what the major contributing factors are to good air and bad air. We were provided with a set of tools that we could take home and install around the house. We had monitors that would measure the particulates in the air, a radon monitor, some CO2 monitors, CO monitors, and kept a weekly log of what those monitors were recording and what we were doing during the different times of day. We were provided with a few recommendations for how to improve indoor air quality, keeping windows closed, and also understanding how everyday activities like making food or cleaning cause spikes in poor air quality. After the initial study, we qualified for an intervention to really improve the air handler in the house. The intervention involves modifying the furnace fan so that it would consistently blow at a low speed to keep the air circulation going at all times. And so we had Rhett, the energy doctor, come and take a bunch of measurements of our furnace and its filtration system. He had some ductwork fabricated and came to take out a portion of the existing ductwork and install a larger set of ductwork that was capable of handling better filters. And so he installed a main filter, I think it's a 4-inch filter, that does the main work of filtering the air, and then also a pre-filter that helps to catch the really big bits of dust.
Okay, I've got a new motor in here. This is all new ductwork working up to here. And this is our new MERV 13 filter.
We installed the larger ductwork and filtration system and just immediately saw like a huge drop in the readings on the instruments. This is data from May 2017 through October 2017. And it's outdoor air quality, indoor air quality, and an additional indoor air quality monitor that was in the house. The May column, which are these three blocks here, you can see are all mostly orange and red, which indicates pretty poor air quality. And those all happened before the intervention. And so as you can see, after the May block, all the other blocks are really high quality while the outdoor air quality got really bad. I mean, in particular, this block here, which is for August, the outdoor air quality is terrible, but the indoor air quality is still like deep green or middle green for the most part.
What's so important to me about Raucous is that people have the ability to impact their quality of life, and that there are tools that help them to do that, to help them to see that they've had an impact, that can help guide them on that journey. And they realize they're not powerless, even if they can't afford to move or relocate to a place that's got better air quality.
It took some adjustment. I think that we were definitely both like windows open, ceiling fans on kind of people. And so it took some adjustment to keep the windows up and the air conditioning going over the course of the summer. But I mean, that really helps protect our lungs and protect our health and keep the air quality in the house high over the course of the summer.
If we just had clean air, you know, dealing with indoor air quality would be relatively easy.
I could see the kind of filtration system that we had installed becoming part of residential building codes. It wasn't an expensive intervention. It wasn't a time-consuming intervention. It seems to me like it's something that most homes could benefit from and probably should. And we're hopeful it's something that, you know, pays dividends in terms of our own health, you know, for years to come.
Pretty good day.
Pretty good day so far.
Awesome. Thank you. Pretty awesome video, I think. Thanks, Linda. Let's see. I'm gonna change to a new screen. Give me a minute here. Okay. There we go. Okay. So it's about 60 air handlers we've looked at to date, and we continue to look at them as opportunity arises and fix the ones we can. Not all can be fixed due to a lot of constraints, not the least of which is budget. So 1-inch filters, you'll see them everywhere, and we want our systems to be filtered and we want clean air, but 1-inch filters are a real problem in the system. They're just too highly restrictive, especially once they get dirty, and they get dirty very quickly. And most people, if they pay $15 for a filter, they're not going to change it very often. They're just not gonna. So the thing that I go out to measure is total external static pressure, TESP. So what that is, it's a combined highest positive and negative in the furnace air handler, and it represents the total resistance of the system. The greater the TESP, the more restricted the airflow will be. So here's a technical drawing I did myself. See these four places before and after the filter, and then before and after the air conditioning coil, you got to drill holes. Sometimes the holes are already there. Sometimes you don't have to drill a hole, but quite often I have to drill. So drill very carefully. Then measuring between B and C is where the greatest pressure differences are. And that's going to be our total external static pressure. Use a very simple device, static pressure probe, $15. And then, of course, a digital manometer, which most of us have. They're a little bit more expensive, but most of us have them already. And then we're measuring within the system. Now, every furnace has a plate that'll tell you how much total external static pressure it's supposed to be allowed to have. In this case, it's 0.5 inches of water column or 125 pascals. I usually measure in pascals, but you got to convert back and forth. So that label is on every furnace, and most people just totally ignore it. They just don't measure. They just don't know. And generally speaking, all furnaces seem to exceed this total external static pressure. I take four different measurements where I showed you. I record them on sheets that I've made up, which I'll share with anybody who's willing to take a stab at this. And then I start doing the calculations. Now, in this case, after doing the calculations, I realized that if there's high total external static pressure, in this case, 125 is what's allowed, half an inch of water column, but in every mode, whether it's AC, low, high, or constant speed, we're exceeding that by quite a bit, like double. So there's problems with this system, and this is not a good system to be running continuously at very high cost to the system. So in this case, if there's return restrictions, I can measure them between A itself is for return restrictions, B is the pressure drop across the filter, C is before the coil and after the coil is D. So I can figure out by these measurements what's going on. Now, while I'm doing that, I also use a clamp, a CT. It's a clamp-on device that there's a number of different styles that you can use, but I use the OWL. It converts the magnetic field to wattage, and then it has a wireless display that I keep outside the furnace because the clamp has to go inside the furnace. There it is inside the cavity of the furnace, and then you got to put the cover on or it doesn't run. So I need a wireless screen. Here I've got the wireless OWL that's recording the wattage. In this case, that's electric backup heat it's capturing there, but generally I can see just the wattage on the fan draw. So what are the things that can increase the total external static pressure? Well, the wrong fan speed, which as Linda said, is quite often done wrong, quite often. Dirt in the filter or in the air conditioning coil. That's a big killer there. And then if there's restrictions in the obstructions in the return or the supply, I can see that with my measurements. And then of course, the greater the TESP, either the lower the airflow with a permanent split capacitor or the higher the wattage draw with a constant speed ECM. This is a fan curve that you would see for a certain brand here. I don't know which one, but there's a low and a medium high on a permanent split capacitor. And in this case, if I'm on the high speed and I'm measuring 0.6 inches of water column or 150 pascals, that would be, I'm going to have about 1300 CFM. If, however, my total external static pressure is about 200 pascals or 0.8 inches of water column, I only have about 1200 CFM. That's a big drop and probably not enough for that system to perform correctly. So I'm going to look at that system, and sometimes just reducing the fan speed to the medium fan, I'm going to lower the static pressure, and I may still get pretty close to that 1200 CFM, even though I've lowered the fan speed because I'm not pushing so hard against the restrictions. This is for an ECM motor, this is a static pressure chart for an ECM motor I just worked on this week. This would be for a constant CFM. So if you notice, no matter what the total external static pressure, I get about the same CFM. But that comes at a high cost in wattage. As you look, it's almost three times as much wattage, the higher the static pressure. You'll see that here in a chart, that the higher the static pressure, the higher the wattage is going to be. And that costs our people money. So we want to identify if there's a problem before we will recommend that someone run this furnace all of the time to clean their air. So as I'm checking, I got my clamps on there. I get the furnace running. I'm checking for a heat rise. And a heat rise will tell me a lot about the fan speeds. Now, every furnace has the heat rise chart right on the side of the label. And it's a range here, 40 to 70, 50 to 80. This is a three-stage furnace. So I want to figure out where we're at after running the furnace for about 10, 12 minutes. I'm going to look at the heat rise. And the slower that the airflow goes through the heat exchanger, the greater the heat rise will be. And if it's running too fast, it's going to be a lower heat rise. I compare this to the manufacturer's chart. And one of the easiest things for me to do, if it's low, I change the fan speed. It's pretty common that they're going to take this fan out of HVAC out of the box, put it in the customer's house, and leave it on the factory set speeds, which are always the highest speeds. Very, very seldom do I find them adjusted correctly. And when I do, I'm kind of surprised. So if the heat rise is too low, I adjust the fan speed. And it's actually pretty easy. So every furnace has a chart, either in the book or on the back of the panel. And figure out which one's low, medium, high, and quickly adjust it. A lot of furnaces nowadays are using dip switches. It takes me a little more time to figure out what needs to be done, but you can do it. You can adjust just about anything with dip switches in some of these fancier trains and carriers. Then I'm going to recheck the heat rise. Make sure that my temp drop is closer to the higher end of the range, not too high, or I end up hitting high limit. So I do check it, make sure we're not slowing it too much. But the slower the speed, the lower the total external static pressure. So in this case, here's an example where I measured real high static pressure, more than double, or at least double here. So when I saw that there are restrictions in the filter. I changed the filter, but also have a low heat rise. I knew to turn down the fan speed. And when I did, my restrictions lessened. It didn't go away, but they lessened. And I also got a better heat rise. Now, I can do this on my first visit. I haven't changed anything but adjusting the fan. And sometimes that's the best I can do for folks. All right. Next, we're going to look at the filter. And if the filter is causing the problem or the coil, again, the same static pressure measurements will show me that. 4-inch filters. This is maybe counterintuitive to many people still. But a 4-inch filter is way less restrictive than a 1-inch filter. And people don't understand that. They think it's the other way around, but it's because of the surface area. The more surface area you have, the easier it is for the air to get through there. And other people will push back on using wider filters because they say people won't change them. But they don't change the ones they got anyway. So they don't change the 1-inch filters. They kill their furnace faster than if they put a 4-inch filter in there. But a 4-inch filter could conservatively last 6 months, sometimes a year, if the filter system's not too dirty. Here's an example of a retrofit we did. This one, when I got there, was oversized furnace, undersized ductwork. You see they've got the place there at the bottom of the return to let extra return air in there because they didn't have enough and they knew it. And a 1-inch filter, what a mess this was. So in this case, there was restrictions in the filter and restrictions in the coil, as we will see. Plus the ductwork was restricted. So there's a lot to do on this guy. Look at the high static pressure here, just tremendously high static pressure. And across the filter was 4 times what would be ideal on that 1-inch filter. And also the return system was restricted. So I did in fact try to adjust the fan speed, but when I did that, the furnace shut down on a high limit because it went too slow and it was too hot within the heat exchanger. So it shuts down to protect itself. So I could not adjust it during that visit, but we did prepare for fixing this system. So in this case, the ductwork was what we had to work on. This was the coil that we took out of there. I didn't do it. I had an air conditioning tech get in there, and you see those are bugs. That's bugs filling this coil. So that one was pretty darn restricted. Those bugs were stuck to the face of the coil, and that was part of the problem in the supply. All right. Then I took the return, and we had, if you can see at the top, quite a bit of ductwork in the old system, and then somebody had skinnied it down. Not sure why, but they did. So we fattened it back up again. We put a horizontal filter in there, put a 1-inch pre-filter for it, and then some turning vanes and a nice radius curve. About $500, give or take. It could have taken more, depending on what you want to make on a job. But this is the 4-inch filter we put in, much less restrictive than a 1-inch. This is our boulder catcher. We don't want to let all the junk from big old dirty duct systems mess up that new MERV 13. So we try this 1-inch boulder catcher. Doesn't have much pressure drop across that filter, and they do get dirty quite quickly in an old house. So they change those once a month. That keeps the MERV 13 filter much cleaner and probably 6 months. So here's the type of motor that we're using. It's a constant torque, if that translates to any of you guys. It's a constant torque rather than a constant CFM. And it allows us, it has 5 taps on it, and it can go as low as 400 CFM or thereabouts. And that's at a very low wattage. So that's why we like this particular motor. And it's a couple $100, $230 the last time we bought one. And it takes a few hours for me to put it in and adjust it. And I can adjust it to each mode of the furnace pretty well. I can dial it in so I can get the heat rise correctly and the temperature drop and the air conditioning done correctly. They fit right inside the squirrel cage. Usually get a chance to clean the squirrel cage while I'm at it. So the post retrofit I tested, and we've adjusted static pressure in NICE. We dropped the total external static pressure by nearly half. And our heat rise was right where it belonged. And our total wattage was 177 watts. And if I ran at 24/7 for the entire year, that cost about $194 a year, which compared to $854 with that monstrosity that I took out. So that's 25% of what the original cost was. Pretty good. Here's a crazy big box builder put this thing in there. I'm not even sure why they built it the way they did. They got a little, all kinds of room for a 4-inch filter, and they put a 1-inch in there. And, you know, I don't know what to say about that. So the static pressure was a little high, not terrible, but you can see the cost of the wattage of that thing was high, almost $600 a year if they were to run it 24/7. So what we did is tore it apart. Now, here's something we haven't thought about. Mastic. We're masticing up the systems pretty heavily. And what's going to happen when we have to take those systems apart? Well, here's one thing that I used. And I also used a hammer and a chisel. And that pretty much got the mastic apart. Here I am putting in a new motor. And takes a little bit of work. But if I can figure it out, you can too. Now, here's one thing we do not want to do. This was a off-the-shelf example of a retrofit. We tried this early on, and we realized we didn't gain much. The static pressure was still too high. It was still a bad angle for the air coming in, so there was just not the we didn't gain what we wanted to gain by doing this. Here's the drawing that I just made that shows some of the best practices that we can use. Now, if we use a horizontal filter box, it's much less turbulence in the system. So instead of that filter right next to the furnace, we put in a horizontal, usually 20 by 25 filter. Put an outside radius on it so the air has a chance to smoothly go around the corner, and an inside radius, which is very important. This inside radius cannot be ignored. You do not want a square cut inside there. Or the alternative is turning vanes. They're going to go on the inside. And you can get away with square corners if you have turning vanes, because they'll tell the air where to go. You want a MERV 13 filter would be ideal, because that's going to take out the PM 2.5. And in this case, a flexible duct connector allows you some grace to make the system fit correctly. So that flexible duct connector doesn't provide too much turbulence to the system there. And then you usually have to make some custom made transition to go to the trunk line. So takes me less than a day to do all this new motor and new system. So here, there's my turning vanes and a 90 degree transition. Works pretty well. There's large drop to accommodate that larger filter, a MERV 13 filter with, in this case, we could have put in a pre or a post filter depending on the way I flipped the box. And if people have, if they have VOC issues, they can actually put in a activated carbon filter, and that will work pretty well. Then I dial in that motor quite precisely so I get the heating speeds correctly. And then here we got a 5-year-old home, about $1,000 investment. We dropped it from 138 down to 52, the total external static pressure with the continuous mode. Dropped it to 360 watts. So from 583 down to $142 a year. It's like a $441 reduction. So that's really a 2-year payback for someone to get clean air. That's not bad. So here's the example that you saw from Ryan's house. This is 120 watts when we were running his. The dropped the continuous mode down to 16 pascals total external static pressure. That was pretty amazing there. So those are all the things we did for Ryan, and came out with a great change out there. So speaking of change out, when people are replacing the furnace, it's a perfect time to do this. Or if perhaps they're going to be putting AC in, this is a great time to sell clean air. So you guys that are selling this for a living, pay attention. Or maybe even crisis change outs for the weatherization program. The first thing you ought to be doing is downsizing the furnace. You guys know this. Most of them are too big, and you can only push so much air through this ductwork that's in the house. It's much more likely we're going to change the furnace than change much of the ductwork. So let's downsize this furnace to what the true need is, especially if you're going to weatherize. Then we change the return drop and the filter box. Here's just something I saw on Facebook. This guy had a great big old furnace that he was going to downsize anyway. So he took those principles. Didn't learn them from me, but he learned them. And there's the rounded return drops, the flexible duct boot, and then the horizontal filter. That must work great there. So here's a something we tested last winter. This one had a 1-inch filter, high MERV, all the things we don't like about ductwork, too small, hard curves. We had real high static pressure. We had high return problems because it was a restricted return. And on top of that, we had really high carbon monoxide. So I didn't condemn the furnace, but I told him, you better get this tested. And the guy who came out condemned it. We were able to talk the customer into a smaller two-stage furnace, not as small as we'd like, but smaller. And then I actually submitted this drawing to the HVAC installer, trying to get him to put together a system that would work correctly. This is what we got. It's not everything we asked for. You notice the corner is still not rounded and there are no turning vanes in there. Nah, I forget if there's turning vanes or not, but they had a MERV 11 filter. That's the highest they had in that manufacturer's stock. So when we tested it out, we had much better pressure drop across the filter, much better pressure drop across the, much pressure drop across the return. And the only thing that I wasn't super happy with is that the motor wasn't as efficient as the one that I would have put in a retrofit situation. It still costs $250 a year to run that 24/7. However, we put in an Ecobee thermostat, which could allow that homeowner to run it at 30 minutes an hour. So if you did that, you'd drop the cost to $125 a year, $10 a month to get clean air. I think that's a pretty good deal. So that's, if you want to contact me, you want some of my charts, I can send you PDFs of the charts. You're welcome to use them. And back to Linda. I can stop sharing here. There you go, Linda.
Thanks, Brett. Okay, it's not advanced. Oh, here we go. Okay, so this is a graph of the video, Ryan's home that you saw in the video, just showing pre and post and the tremendous increase, even though in this case, the air quality is much worse outside. And a summary of his data, which was that materials and labor, $1,000, operating costs about $12 a month. And the key thing was it was lower. He had pretty elevated CO2 in his bedrooms or in his bedroom. It was a fairly small house. So as a result of the 24/7 air movement, the CO2 dropped significantly by mixing throughout the house. This is one of the best performing houses we've had consistently. This is about 2.5 years ago. But again, you'll see really poor outdoor air and yet amazingly good indoor from a particle count perspective, much improved and consistently in the excellent range. And here you see the digraph, the time series graph. And this is real typical. What happens when you run the air handler 24/7 is, even though we've got two dialos, one in a bedroom, one in the living area, they line up because the air is mixed throughout the house. But even with it being as low as it is, it tracks outdoor air. Sort of amazing how closely it follows outdoor air. But there was a 400 watt reduction. So we came up with an air handler checklist. It's on our website. And it's designed so that a homeowner can share it with a HVAC contractor and just say, this is what I need you to check. Rather than just asking the question of whether or not they should run their air handler 24/7. It's a matter of, well, it needs to meet this criteria. This is focused on what we see. So it's focused on typical residential furnaces in southwestern Pennsylvania. But it's got the key things that we look for there. So this graph shows you the reduction in particles. The pre is at the top of the blue bar, and the post is at the bottom of the deep blue bar. So you see in many cases, the reduction in particles was 85 to 90% reduction in particles from running the air handler 24/7. And here you see pretty amazing drop in the watts, the watt draw. And this is where it's a good thing they're not using that air handler 24/7 because it cost them an arm and a leg. But you see much improved performance. So there's a big opportunity HVAC replacement to downsize. The smaller HVAC system will reduce the static pressure. You sort of match the new system to the ducts. And then to also incorporate the return drop modification and the larger, deeper filter that will keep them from hopefully from putting in a 1-inch filter and really messing up their new investment. So it's really a good investment in resilience of that heating system is to provide for a deeper filter that's far more forgiving if it's not changed regularly. And then set the blower speeds for optimal performance, address any duct system shortcomings, make sure you don't have duct leakage to an attic or to a garage on the return side. Fairly important to look at that. And I think it's really interesting is to consider whether the kinds of things we're talking about could be the benefits that would allow you to really increase the installation of HVAC systems that are designed and installed correctly. So if we could just get this together as a package, this would sort of separate out the low bid, just replace the box from the approach to actually fix the system and make it work well. So bottom line in terms of air handlers, so 24/7 MERV filtration, is it can be incredibly effective, but you don't want to do it without confirming the fan cost, that there's minimal duct leakage to outside, the static pressures within the operating range, and as 1-inch pleated filters can be very restrictive. So we really want to avoid them. So what happens if air handler filtration is not an option? There is another use for those MERV 13 deep filters. And that is if you take a 4-inch filter and you tape it onto a 20-inch box fan, you can either set it up in a space as a portable air cleaner, or you could put it in a window to filter incoming air if the outdoor air is poor. This is a chart just showing you the air quality based on the Dylos readings of one of our sites where the outdoors is pretty bad, the indoors even worse in many cases. This is the bedroom location. They had a very small air cleaner in the bedroom, and you can see it had a little bit of an impact. But right here is where they started using the fan filter in the bedroom. And you can see the benefit in the bedroom and also in the living space. So one thing that there's been a lot of interest in fan filters with the wildfires and also COVID, because there's actually a shortage of portable air cleaners. and a concern for, in some cases, the cost of the portable air cleaners. So this is called the Cube, and I don't have the link, but there's a great article based on this, so I'll make sure it gets in the one we post. Basically, taking four MERV 13 filters, and these could be the 2-inch filter, not the 4-inch, they're more readily available, taping them together to create a seal, and also taping them to a piece of cardboard at the bottom, and then placing the 20 by 20 inch box fan on top, pulling the air through these. So you got to make sure the arrows are all pointed in the right direction, all pointed in. But when this has been tested, the performance has been much better than just putting a filter directly on the fan. And you could actually do it with either 1-inch or 2-inch filters, which you wouldn't want to do with a box fan. So there are lots of options. And don't despair if you can't do the air handler on a 24-hour basis. So in summary, here are the filter essentials. You want a larger filter with more surface area. You want a deeper filter that also gets you that more surface area, both deeper and wider. You want a low resistance filter. And in some cases, there's a label on the filter actually telling you the performance and the static. We should be seeing that a lot more. I think California passed some regulations asking filter manufacturers to do that. And you absolutely want to minimize the filter bypass. You don't want air going around the filter, because the better the filter is, the more you're compromising performance if any air can get around it. And we would recommend that you use the MERV 13 to reduce the 0.3 to 0.5 particles. And however, the MERV is sort of like R value. The performance really depends on how you install it and operate it. And that's why you want the lower airflow to get the better performance in reducing the small particles. So you also need to provide the option for adequate runtime, assuming the system passes the diagnostic screening. So this is one shot of a filter bypass, but lots of times it's not quite as much of a gaping hole. It might just be small cracks, but small cracks around the entire filter, or at the edge where the filter goes in, or between the filter and the air and the actual furnace. So conclusions. Air filtration can significantly reduce particle counts in the right application. Low-cost monitors really reinforce the use of filtration. So we've actually got folks that are very happy to use the filter 24/7 because they've seen the impact in terms of reduced particles. We've also seen that with tighter houses, the air handler will do a lot better in terms of going further, having a greater impact. It only makes sense if there's a tighter house, you've got the ability to have a greater impact. A big leaky house is harder to keep up with, particularly if the pollutant source is outdoors. But the tighter the building, the more critical it is to control the indoor sources. So the other things could be significant. And in some cases, when you don't have options for doing either, controlling indoor sources or doing the centrally operated filtration system, you can shift your exposure to just making sure the bedroom's better with a portable air cleaner, a fan filter in the bedroom, which is where people spend a lot of their time. So that could be a solution that helps. The bottom line is we need integrated solutions to address health, resilience, energy efficiency, comfort, durability. So all those things will make a difference. And with better outdoor air quality, it's much easier to see an incredibly good benefit. So we'd like you to send your questions, your comments, suggestions to us. And Rhett, what would you like to add?
That's all I think of for now, but I'm willing to share those data sheets. If anybody wants to learn static pressure testing, it's not that difficult. There's folks out there teaching it with their own versions. Mine's a conglomeration of other people's versions, but I'm willing to share if it can help folks out there. So just give me an email and I'll do what I can for you.
Great. Well, thank you very much. We look forward to hearing from you. Have a good day. Bye-bye.